Okay, we're going to get started this morning. This will be our last class of this quarter, and I won't be back until the fall, I guess. I'll be teaching twice during the summer, once on Judah, or Judah Iscariot, in June, and then in July I'll be teaching on Saul and Paul, the dichotomy. Give you a little bit different perspective on Paul. That, I don't think anyone's ever taught on Judas Iscariot, so it'll be interesting because he's like you and I. No absolute difference. And drive that point home. Howard, today we're on Jacob. We're in chapter 28, and this is the dream. Now, we're going to have to fly through this. I have 33 slides. I'll be gone for the summer. Obviously, we won't have another class, so I have to get through everything today. There'll be no 2 weeks on this.
Speaking shorthand.
Yeah. Okay. Jacob lived. He had a dream. He died. He never realized it. That's the shorthand version. And most of his posterity did not realize the dream either. So from there, off we go. So, Genesis, Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 through 22 is the recitation of Jacob's dream. There was the journey. He had to leave home, ostensibly to find a wife. Really? To save his own skin. On the way, he had a dream just before he left Canaan, just before he left the quote-unquote promised land. Then we had Jacob's reaction, the anointing of the pillow, that'd be a rock. They turned to a pillar by putting it up on its end, and the making of a vow. Now, do we do the same error as Jacob did? Well, let's explore and see. Because first we have to understand what Jacob did. And we have to remember that honesty really doesn't run very deeply in this family. But then honesty doesn't run very deeply in anybody, because otherwise we wouldn't all be sinners. So he's just like us. He's not any better. He's not any worse. He's not any different. His family isn't any better, isn't any worse, isn't any different than any others. And I tried to bring that out in our past two or three lessons there. Saying he's not being very honest. He's about to leave the land, and he is in a place called, well, he's between a place called Luz or Luz and Ai. Now, Ai, some of you probably remember from the book of Heshua or Joshua, where they got their butts kicked because of, who was that guy again?
Achan.
Achan, that's right. So he stops here in the wilderness between two towns. And it's very rough terrain. And then he has a dream. And it's a dream I don't believe he understood. And it's a dream I don't believe I understood before I broke out the references and traced through the scriptures to study this. And I don't think I've heard a coherent sermon on this that really explores the dream. Where is this place? Well, here it is. Here is Bethel, because that's what he called it. But before then, it was Luz or Luz, and not Ai. So he's right in here, and he's going to be leaving the promised land most tick. That's what it looks like. See the lush green meadows to lie down in? Where you can pillow your head on the soft grass. We're kind of missing that, aren't we? No wonder he had to use a rock for a pillow, because that's what it looks like. In fact, every picture I found from down through history or painting, it looked like that. So it's not much different today than it was then. The dream, the interpretation, actually hinges on one word. And that is not uncommon. If you've understood what I've tried to get across in my classes, is that we go back to the original language as much as possible. And I by no means speak or write Hebrew. I have to rely heavily upon my resources. But we look at it and we try to determine why the translator picked the words they picked. And that's why I go back to the experts, and there's lots of them, and they all have an opinion. And sometimes it's like walking in the marsh. You just don't know where the right step is. So this is the highway to heaven, the glimpse of heavenly Jerusalem. Just the facts, please. So Jacob uses a rock for a pillow. Jacob dreams of angels ascending and descending between earth and heaven. Jacob awakens in the morning in fear of God. Now, in my translation, the ESV, it says in awe. He was in awe of God. But when you look at the Hebrew and you look at the meanings and the context, he wasn't in awe of God. He was in absolute deadly fear of God, because suddenly he knew how sinful he was and how righteous and holy God was. Jacob anoints the pillow, i.e. turns it up on end. He turns it into a pillar, which, by the way, 400 years later is going to be illegal under the law. Just so you know, you can't do that under the law. You can't make pillars and all of this, because that's what they did with their idols up in the trees and the hills and the valleys. They would put up these stone monuments and have their sacrifices and stuff right on those. And so under the Mosaic law, it was illegal. Does that mean that God is contradictory? No. Remember, incense during this time is still okay. Under the law, it's not going to be okay. That's why Abraham married his half-sister. That's why Jacob is going to marry a very close relative, something that we would frown on today, because ever since the Mosaic Law, we frown on that. There's a lot of discussion about the gene pool and all of that. And it's all true. Trivia. Anyone been to England? See the chairs? I know you did, stop it. And where they crown the monarchs, there's a big stone in that chair. Supposedly, it's Jacob's stone. It came to Ireland in 500 AD. Then later on, during the medieval period, the Scots stole it from the Irish. And then in around 1700s or so, 1600s or so, King Edward I, he stole it from the Scots. He says if they can't nominate a king, they won't be as rebellious. That's true. They couldn't nominate a king. They were just as rebellious. It didn't work for them. And Jacob makes a vow to God. Jacob's vow contrasts with God's promise to him. Anybody pick up on that? The promise that God made to Jacob stands in stark contrast to the vow that Jacob made to God. And it heralds a difference between the spiritual Israel and the earthly Israel. Now we have to start thinking in these terms, because Paul talks about this in Romans, and we're going to briefly touch on that as we go through this. There is a Jewish people that are spiritual. And there's lots of Jewish people that are not. Now, we shouldn't be confused about that, because when Christ walked the earth, his disciples were spiritual Israel. Most of the people were not. Remember, he said, I did not trust myself to the crowds, because he knew them. And he certainly didn't trust the Pharisees and Sadducees. Earthly Israel is different from spiritual Israel. Even the terminology that's used is different. So let's read this. This is out of the International Standard Version because the only one I found that actually translated it as it should be. I won't say correctly. He reached a certain place and spent the night there because the sun was setting. He found a stone there and used it for a pillow and slept there for the night. When he had a dream, he saw a raised highway that had been built with its ending point on earth and its beginning point in heaven. God's angels were ascending and descending on it. Notice the change. I bet you your version says, and what do you say, ladder? Ladder, ladder. Anybody ever think that that was just a little ridiculous? I'm trying to visualize how this ladder is supposed to work and stuff.
Well, you can slide down the ladder, but they can't slide up.
They're angels. They can do anything. The actual Hebrew word is sulam. Sulam. And unfortunately, it's only used one time in the scriptures. Now, the problem in translating a word that's only used one time, it means it's probably obscure. And the only context you have is that one context. And they basically took it off of, quote unquote, modern Hebrew, which uses the word for ladder. But when you go on back and look at its cognates, at its related words, as we're going to as we go through this, is that it frequently is used in relationship to a raised road. Now you have to remember, roads were very, very rare in Jacob's time. It wasn't until the Roman Empire that roads became commonplace, because Rome built roads everywhere. And smooth those armies along faster, those messengers along. So this particular word is only used the one time. It's difficult to be dogmatic and say it's ladder. I think that it was just picked because, well, once again, when they first started translating in these 15, 1600s, their knowledge of Hebrew was very rudimentary. And they basically were borrowing off the Ashkenazi Jews in their neighborhood who were using that as ladder because they lived in the medieval period. And that's what you used, ladders to get up and down your barn and stuff. A ladder makes no sense in this imagery. It looks cute in a childhood story. It's an imagery the child can grasp. They climbed up and down a ladder. But as we shall discover, the word highway, and I'm using it in the English sense of the word, has meaning in both Old Testament prophecy and glimpses of God's heaven in the New Testament. So we're going to take a trip through the scriptures. We're going to go from Genesis, further back, all the way to Revelation. See, we cannot see what Jacob saw if we don't translate it coherently so that it makes sense. Otherwise, we just think Jacob just saw a bunch of angels going up and down the ladder, and he just got, oh, wow, angels. I'm impressed. But when you read the rest of his statements, he saw more than that. Because he says more than that. And very often when I read this in the past, all the time when I read this in the past, I just concentrated on the angels and I blew by the rest. And it didn't make any sense. Here is a better picture of it, but it's still somewhat a misunderstanding. First of all, why are all the angels women, blonde, with wings? Medieval, Renaissance painters, Reformation painters, they love. Angels were all women. Mostly blonde. I found a few that weren't. And where did this wing stuff come from?
Well, if you can fly,
it means something. Yeah, the seraphim. But they're there for an imagery. And besides, if you're going to paint wings, you need three pairs. So at least here it's a stair, which is probably closer to the translation. In fact, when the Septuagint, the word there is klamas, which does mean stairway. And so when they translated it in the 2nd century BC into the Greek, they translated it as stairway. And that doesn't do damage to what we're going to say, but we're going to expand on that. So at least it's a stair. But do adults understand this any bit better than the children? Isn't it really just another story? Aren't we just, when we come to Genesis, trapped in the story mentality rather than reading this as reality? We're trapped in stories. We teach our kids stories. Stories aren't real. So if stories aren't real and we're teaching them Bible stories, when they grow up, guess what? It's not real. They leave it behind with the other fairy tales and nursery rhymes that you taught them, because the Bible's just stories. So let's try teaching it like it's actually real, and we're going to approach it like this actually happened. Does anyone else teach about the city of God? Let's look at Old Testament prophecy. Turn to Isaiah chapter 35. Because Isaiah is speaking of the millennial kingdom. And it's important that we really have a good handle on the prophecies, on the prophets. Because it's through them that we're going to be able to understand Israel's role in the world then and now. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom like the crocus. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. It shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong, fear not, behold, your God. Will come with vengeance, with the recompense of God. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, and the lame man shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute shall sing for joy. Anybody getting an imagery of Christ in his first ministry there? For waters break forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool in the thirsty ground, springs of water in the haunt of the jackals where they lie down. And the grass shall become reeds and rushes. That would be referring to his second coming. And a highway shall be there, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over. It shall belong to those who walk on the way. Even if they are fools, they shall not go astray. And so on and so forth. In fact, if you turn to Zechariah 14, verses 16 through 17, he tells you why you're traveling on that highway. Because in the millennial kingdom, everyone is required to keep the festival of booths every single year. And if you don't, it's bad juju on your land. That means no rain. That's right. No rain, amongst other things. So here he's talking about a highway, the highway of holiness, the road that goes to Jerusalem. This is a cognate of that word shulam. They're related. And it really is a raised road. In fact, it was Isaiah prophesies of John the Baptist. It's close. Turn to Isaiah 40. And verses 3 through 5. A voice cries in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. The uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places a plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. In other words, part of the process that's going on in the Great Tribulation is God is refuting evolution millions of years because he's changing the earth before their eyes to what it was in the antediluvian period. Only rather than doing it in a year and a half and killing everyone, he's doing it in 7 years. And they know it's the hand of the Lord. We know from Revelation, where they say, we know this is the Lord. Rocks, fall on us. Hide us from the eyes of him. But still, they do not come to know him. But what is God doing? All mountains are level, except for the mountains of Jerusalem. And all the valleys are brought up. In other words, it's all a flat plain again, except for Jerusalem. It's on its mountain still. So if you go to the Psalms of Ascent, and they sang those as they went up from Jericho all the way up to Jerusalem in the mountains, they'll be doing that again in the Millennial Kingdom period as they go on the highway of holiness up to Jerusalem to keep the Festival of Booths. But notice, this prophecy here refers also to whom? John the Baptist. A voice crying in the wilderness. Make straight the ways of the Lord. Now, what's the first thing you have to do to build a road?
Foundation.
Ah, my man. Foundation. You need a foundation. That's what Christ was doing in his first ministry. He was laying the foundation. This road will then be completed in the millennial time period. Well, the great tribulation, though. Use it in the millennial time period. The physical road. What about the road that Jacob saw? That we shall see. Because what we know about prophecy, it has a near view and a far view. The near view is John the Baptist, Christ's first coming. Far view, multiples. Christ coming again, great tribulation, millennial kingdom. Then after that, we'll see. We'll get there. What's the highway's destination? Every highway has to go someplace, right? What did Jacob say when he woke up in the morning? Did he not say, this is the Imberit Elohim, house of God? Now, if you just blow through that in a cursory reading, you think he's talking about that rocky hillside he was sleeping on. This is the house of God. We're in deep trouble. I mean, I'm expecting a little more in the millennial kingdom than a valley of rocks to sleep on. Just so you know. But how about if he actually saw the house of God? Because he talks about the gate of God. Where's the gate at? Gate's where he's at. He sees the highway, sees the house of God. That's why he calls it Beth, house, El, God. Not because the house of God is there at Bethel, because he never builds a temple there. In fact, it's years before he comes back there, even after he comes back to the promised land, to rededicate himself there and to share all this with his family, who's been worshiping idols for 20 years. And this here explains why there are only mountains will be those on which Jerusalem sits. Once again, we're in Zechariah 14, 10 and 11. He tells us quite plainly there that only Jerusalem will be in the mountains. So the highway's destination is the city of God. And then we can all break out into hymn and clasp hands. I'm so glad. And all that. Jerusalem, the temple, are but copies of things that are in heaven. Now, if we go to Hebrews chapter 8, verses 1 through 7, the writer of Hebrews here is telling us that these are but copies. The earthly temple is but a copy of that which is in heaven. That's why God told Moses to make sure that you copy this down correctly. Because these are but copies, but they have to be representative copies. Hey, when you go to the Modern Art Museum and understand a thing that you're looking at, not a stinking thing, because you're not on drugs, first of all. So it doesn't make any sense to you. And they're non-representational of concepts that only show scattered spirituality, a confused mind. But if you go back to the Renaissance area, to the Dutch Reformation, what do you see? You see beautiful representations of reality. Yes, I know, I've debated this in the past with people. Jerusalem in the millennial kingdom will be the home of Christ, David, his vice regent, and of course, the Jews who will minister to all of mankind who come up to the festival of booths. In fact, as you're reading in, I believe it's Zechariah, it says that every pot throughout the entire land of Israel will be holy unto the Lord, because it will be used for this. Because that will be their function. The Jews who enter into the millennial kingdom will be ministers, intercessors between Christ and the rest of mankind, the Gentiles who help them, the ones who get ushered in, the sheep, so to speak. So Jacob tells us what he saw. He was afraid and said, how, now this is out of the ESV, how awesome, it's awesome place. But like I tell my son when he uses that word, I want adjectives. I want something. What do you mean when you say awesome? Well, in Hebrew, he's actually saying, I am very afraid here. God, I saw God, and I'm very afraid of him. That's why the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Because until you're afraid of the judge of God, why should you change? Until you get pulled over by the police and stand before the judge, like you used to do when you get speeding tickets down south, you get hauled up before the judge and he decided how much to fine you. And you had to pay in cash. If you didn't pay in cash, you paid in time, right then. $200, 10 days, take your pick. No cash, easy pick, 10 days, boom, you're in jail. Here's your phone call. Then you start saying, maybe I shouldn't be doing that fast anymore. And he says, this is none other than the house of God. And that's why he called it Bethel. And this is the gate of heaven. That's how we get there. Jacob saw what these men saw. Jesus in glory in heaven, I believe. You put a little asterisk up there. I believe that's what Jacob saw. Isaiah, in Isaiah 6, 1 through 6, he has a vision of God on his throne in heaven, saying, who will go? And Isaiah says, woe am I. I am a man of unclean lips. So the seraphim come down and sear his lips, and off he goes. Daniel, in chapter 7, he has a vision of God coming down from heaven. Ezekiel 1:1, a vision of God on the earth coming down. Then we have the wheel in the wheel of the eyes. The wheel in the eyes. Break out in song again. How about Stephen in Acts chapter 7? He's being stoned. He opens up his eyes, or he looks up, and Christ is standing, waiting for him. You know, Paul had a vision. Paul refused to talk about it to us. I think he talked about it to others. That's where we get Hebrews from. But he did not want people to follow him because he had a vision of heaven. He says, it's not about me. That's why he had that thorn in the flesh. That's why he realized that. It's not about him. What's the first thing people do today when they have visions of heaven?
Write a book.
Write a book. Make some money. Follow me. I don't care if you're 6 years old or 80 years old. I don't care if you're as ignorant as this door or if you've got doctorate degrees after your name. It's still the same. It's all about me. Of course, John in Revelation gives us the most complete description. In fact, turn there in Revelation chapter 4, verse 1. And what's the first thing that it says there? After this, I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I had heard speaking to me like a trumpet said, come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this. At once I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne stood in heaven with one seated on the throne. I think this is what Jacob saw from afar. City of God. What good does it do him to see angels tromping up and down the staircase? What does that tell him? What is that a vision of? That's a vision of nothing. Because what are angels?
Ministering spirits.
Exactly. They're slaves. Right now, according to Hebrews, as Christ was lower than the angels when he took on human form, so are we lower than angels. But according to Paul, 2 Corinthians, I believe, we're going to judge angels. We're going to be above them. Which I think is one of the reasons Satan had a problem with God creating mankind. He didn't want to be doing that. Because he'd go from being number two in heaven to being way down that totem pole. There's a lot of us. I think he had a problem. Pride. Not that any of us in here have a problem with pride, do we? And he walked that highway. And Satan, you know, Satan walked that highway. Turn to Ezekiel 28. Verses 14-16. You were an anointed guardian cherub. I placed you. You were on the holy mountain of God. Guess what? In heaven, there's a mountain. House of God sits on that mountain. That's why there's only going to be one mountain on earth. For Jerusalem, because it's a copy of what's in heaven. That's not an accident. In the midst of the stones of fire, you walked. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till unrighteousness was found in you. In the abundance of your trade, you were filled with violence in your midst, and you sinned, so I cast you as a profane thing from the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O guardian cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. What color is fire?
Various colors of red.
I love it. Various colors of red. And I didn't even have to prompt them like I do you. She gets an advanced copy so she knows when to fill in the answers. That's right. It's red. It's going to be significant later on. So heavenly Jerusalem, God's throne is on the heavenly mountain. And when Satan sinned, he was determined to be God. And yet, guess what? He can only copy God. Now, the other major chapter in the Old Testament dealing with Satan is Isaiah 14. So I remember, 14, 28. 28 is double of 14. 12 through 14. How are you fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn? And how are you cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low, who said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God, and I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of the assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. That's his plan. Always been his plan. I'm going to be God. Okay, remember when we talked about the Tower of Babel? That it was a ziggurat? What's this?
A stairway
up to worship. Is it clear now? What he was copying? And where did he build this? See? That's right. On the plains of Shinar. No mountains. It's going to be the highest structure there. They were not building this to heaven. They were building this as a stairway to worship. And Nimrod was his Antichrist. And all the people, when they looked up, they saw this. And this is why God stopped it. Now here, it's almost the same, isn't it? This looks flat, but it's not, because where's Jerusalem? In the mountains. It's already up. And so you come along the pathway through the gates into the courts. Court of the Gentiles, the court of the women, the court of the men, the court of the priests, the holy place, the most holy place, in which there is a veil between the two. We need to have those images fixed in our head, because this is why he did what he did. It was not by accident that it was a ziggurat. It was a copy of what he had seen with his own spiritual eyes. And he was just copying. Because Satan doesn't do anything original. Ever. So Satan was building an imitation of the heavenly Jerusalem. Of course, there in Genesis 11, 1 through 4. And he talks about it again in Daniel. In fact, let me turn to Daniel chapter 11. Get too bogged down here. But I really want to drive home how this 31 through 35. And the forces room shall appear and profane the temple and fortress, and shall take away the regular burnt offering, and they shall set up the abomination that makes desolate. And he shall seduce with flattery those who violate the covenant, but the people who know their God shall stand firm and take action. And the wise among the people shall make many understand, though for some days they shall stumble. Sword and flame, captivity and plunder. Why is it that Satan wants to make his capital in Jerusalem during the tribulation? It's the only thing on the mountain. It's the only thing elevated. And he's going to usurp God. And who's going to put him there? The earthly Jews. Not spiritual Jews. The earthly Jews. The Pharisees. They are the ones who will put them here. So his highway to heaven was to end with worship of himself. This is a very important verse here, Isaiah. God is talking through Isaiah, and he's telling those people that my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways, declare the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Where was Satan's Babel? On a flat plain in Shinar. Where's God's holy temple at? On the mountain of heaven. When during the millennial kingdom, it's still going to be on the mountain in Jerusalem. It's still going to be high. In other words, what God was telling us here, and it's true today, we think we know about God. The more I study the scriptures, it's like turning on a light in a huge, huge room. I just realize more and more how ignorant I actually am. And how, you know, as it reveals more and I try to put more together, it just overwhelms me. So the path up to the top was designated for worship on the ziggurats. You know, he's still Jacob here. God says your offspring should be like the dust of the earth. That'd be the earthly Jews, the non-spiritual ones. And you should spread abroad to the west, east, north, and south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you forever wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. This is what God is saying to him. I will not leave you. This will happen. We will do this. Abraham never saw the city of God. You know that? He never saw the highway to heaven. Jacob was given an unparalleled vision of what awaited his people, both individually, because he got to see it, and then corporately, down the road. How did he respond? It's all about me. Thank you very much. He never speaks about a relationship with God. He's not saved at this point, so we can't hold that against him. He's just like we were when we weren't saved, or like we are when we refuse to mature. 20 years later, he's going to be saved. But Jacob demonstrates the dichotomy that we've already alluded to, and we're going to touch on here in a moment. You have the heavenly Jerusalem. You have earthly Jerusalem. That's Galatians 4. You have children of Abraham, spiritual Jews. You have the offspring of Abraham. Offspring. We are Abraham's children. Yes, you're offspring of Abraham's children, but you don't do what Abraham did, because Abraham was happy to see my day. You're not. They reverence the law. These guys only try to keep the law. They follow God's truth. The earthly Jews deny God's truth. The true Jews are those that do all this on the left-hand side. These are the antithesis of the true Jews. They persecute true Jews and us and Christ and continue on even to today. This is where Paul is talking about in Romans 2. Those Jews are circumcised inwardly in the flesh. I mean, in the heart. They have bowed to the truth. These verses have been taken out of context through the church age to refer to anyone who's saved being a true Jew. Thus, the church was able to co-opt the promises God gave to the Jews out of the Old Testament. That's why the Puritans had a Sabbath. It was only on the wrong day of the week. And the Seventh-day Adventists said, no, it's the wrong day of the week. We're going to make it on the right day of the week. And so they meet on Saturday instead. But if you're just a Jew outwardly, you're not a spiritual Jew. The way. Jesus is the road to heaven. John chapter 1, 47 through 51. I'm up at 4 o'clock this morning, and God hits me with this, and I'm going, oh my gosh, why didn't I catch on to that? Jesus is talking to Nathanael. And he says, all shall see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said, behold, in Israel indeed, in whom there is no deceit. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? And Jesus answered him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered him and said, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the king of Israel. Jesus answered him, because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree. Do you believe? You will see greater things than this. And he said to him, truly, truly, I will say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man.
Is that to take care of him?
What's that?
That's to take care of him.
No, Jesus is the road.
On the Son of Man.
Jesus is the road. It's on his work. It's on his blood. Jesus is the road. Now, Christ is the intercessor between God and man. Otherwise, you don't have any of this. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, if we go here, Christ told Thomas what? That he was the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by him. He is the road. He is the way. The Bible clearly states the only way into the holy place is through Christ alone after his atoning death. Once again, we go back to Hebrews and we can see that. Thus, the early Christians, mainly Jews, called themselves people of the way. That's why. It's a reference to Christ's reference to Jacob's dream. Now, they may not have understood that, but the Jews did, because they would have known their scriptures. The Gentiles, about the 2nd or 3rd century onward, when they took over the church, they dropped everything Jewish. They didn't understand anything. And so all of this body of knowledge was lost to the churches. Because we're not Jews. We're better Jews. We didn't kill Christ. We do this. We do that. Blah, 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 blah. We are built upon the foundation of the Old Testament. That's why when I teach, we usually go from Genesis to Revelation. We go from Old Testament to New Testament to see how it builds. We are not in a vacuum. So this is the spiritual highway to heaven through the narrow gate. Did Jacob see a gate? Did Christ talk about a gate? Narrow is the gate, paved with blood, fiery stones. Matthew 7. Thus, the new Jerusalem shall descend, and Christ shall dwell with man. The new Jerusalem shall dwell, not on the mountain, above the new earth. Might as well be on the mountain. And we shall all be holy as he is holy. It will be the throne of Christ. It will be truly the light of the world. And guess what? There's no temple there. Because there's no need for a temple there. We are all holy. And all will enter into it periodically for fruit from the what? Tree of life. What was it that Adam and Eve wanted to get? Knowledge? And what did God have to hide from them? Tree of life. See, here's the knowledge they wanted. They had to wait. They couldn't wait. Thus, this is a much better representation of Jacob's dream. Notice the highway of red, of fiery stones, color of blood. This is Christ. Here's the Lamb. That'd be all those who follow Christ, both according to Romans chapter 3, those since the beginning of time before the cross, and those who believe since after the cross. Holy Jerusalem in heaven right now will come down from above in the new earth. Earthly Jerusalem, bad place to be. Jacob, he's heir to old Jerusalem still. It's all about me. If you will keep me, if you will feed me, if you will bring me back, if you will do this, if you will do that, if, then I might believe in you. God says, I'm going to hold you to that vow. And later on in Genesis, he does. He holds him to those words. Stupid words. Same words that we utter. God said, already said, I will do this. Now Jacob's trying to bargain. So, do we understand Jacob's vision now? It's not about a bunch of angels climbing up and down a ladder in the kiddie story. It is about a vision of God in heaven and the future that awaited him and his utter rejection of it in the flesh. Because until God moves upon you, your flesh will always win. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word. Help us to grasp this vision, to meditate upon it, to ruminate it, to go back and search out the scriptures. Lord, give us a vision like you gave him to move us, to inspire us, to help us to be faithful in the tough times that we all face. In Christ's name, amen.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you from all of us.